This is Keep On Cooking, a podcast for people who love cookbooks and want to know more about the authors. It's also a great place to get a weekly dose of culinary inspiration to keep things pumping in the kitchen. So grab a cookbook and keep on cooking. I'm Dustin Harder, and this is Keep On Cooking. Hello, and welcome to Keep On Cooking, the only podcast dedicated to plant-based cookbooks. I'm your host, Dustin Harder, and he's the lion, the witch, and the wardrobe. It's my husband and podcast do-si-do partner in crime, David Rossetti. How are you, my love?
I'm great. What do you think I am today?
The lion, the witch.
The witch.
Oh,
how dare.
No, you're the wardrobe, darling.
I'll be the witch. I'll be... Galinda.
You're all three. All three rolled into one.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, baby.
How are you?
I'm great. You've been nurse extraordinaire, nursing me back to health. I had a major dental surgery done, so I've been on a soft diet.
So soft.
So soft, which for somebody who is a food professional is a nightmare.
That's hard.
I can't like test any recipes or do anything.
For 2 weeks, so it's like a long time.
We've made the most of it. You bought me those delicious little like pureed mango pouches I've been noshing on, which I think maybe you bought more for yourself
than me, but I do love them. They're very comforting.
Lots of smoothies. Lots of green smoothies.
A big old thing, basically a bucket of potato flakes.
I mean, legit, just to make mashed potatoes whenever I want them. But I also like, of course, me being me, I like roasted a bunch of potatoes and made the loaded baked potato soup from my epic vegan cookbook, which is like the best potato soup.
The soft diet has been really great for me
ever.
As well.
I mean, truly, I can't just let it go down with dehydrated mashed potatoes. No. I'm like, no, we'll be making... They're loaded baked potato soup.
You know, like if you don't want to roast
potatoes. And they've been great because I have been making this. I was allowed to have rice. So I've been making this delicious like little Mexi bowl with like some Spanish rice and refried beans and the mashed potatoes. I'll put those in there quick. So I'm like, oh, it's another like soft thing to have in
there. Guacamole.
Little guacamole. A little taco sauce. It's very good. Very delicious. So I've been eating great, even though I've been on a soft diet. But you know, enough about me and my soft diet. I know everyone really cares.
Old person podcast.
I know, right?
I ate potatoes.
Yep. I've been gumming on these things. Listen, I've been chatting with today's guest for over a year trying to get him on the podcast. He is a busy, busy fella and I absolutely adore him. It's the thunder from down under. It's Zachary Bird is on the podcast today.
You do love some Zachary Bird.
I do.
And for good reason. He is hysterical.
Yes.
He is a vegan cookbook author, recipe developer, and social media personality living in Melbourne, Australia.
David's from Melbourne, Florida, and I always like to be, he's from Melbourne.
And I'm like, not that fancy.
Not that fancy at all. Yeah.
Mm. His first cookbook, Vegan Junk Food, a Down and Dirty Cookbook, was released September 2020. And his follow-up cookbook, The Vegan Butcher, was released November 2021 and has been announced the winner of PETA's Best Vegan Cookbook of 2021.
His newest book, The Vegan Baker, The Ultimate Guide to Plant-Based Breads, Pastries, Cookies, Slices, and More, just came out last month, and it is a hefty collection of a variety of baked goods. As a food writer, Zach has had recipes, ingredient guides, and features have been published in both print and online, including but not limited to Women's Weekly, Elle Magazine, Vogue, Good Food, Veg News, The Guardian, The Big Issue, Vegan Food and Living, and many, many more.
Zachary is also featured on season one of Channel 10's Freshly Picked, presenting plant-based recipes such as lox and schmear bagels and his signature southern fried drumsticks. Zachary is an Australian food festival favorite, combining his comedic stylings and exciting food concepts for live content, both in person and online.
I bet at festivals he is a fun one to be watching do a cooking demo.
For sure.
I should probably look that up on YouTube.
I'm sure there's something.
You know, so there's a lot of Greek influence in this book, and I will be transparent for the listeners. Sometimes I'm doing the research for these books and I gravitate towards words that I know because I want to put an episode together for you. And I also want to be just real about what makes sense to me and like what I can pronounce quick. And I'm writing an episode quickly trying to do. In this case, we had a whole schedule thing. His Friday is our Thursday. He thought he was scheduled for Friday, but he was scheduled for the US Thursday. Friday. So suddenly I was putting him on my Thursday to make a long story short, when it was supposed to be the next day. So I was like rushing to get the episode done. It was done. I was just getting fine touches on it, fine tuning, if you will. And I had to put his interview on a day that I had two other interviews. So I was pulling words that I knew from the book. And in the middle of this interview, you're going to hear it. He's like, I noticed you're straying away from all the Greek influenced recipes. Like, he calls me out on it. And I'm like, buddy, I'm trying to go with what I can pronounce right now. Right. Being a little fast and furious is the situation. But there is such a wide variety of recipes in here. And we talk about all of them. We do get into it, because then I was like, you want to talk about it? Shout it out, Zachary. Come on. So it was a blast. I had such a blast with this interview. And, you know, Zach also runs cooking classes across Australia, which I highly suggest you seek out, with themes such as deep fried, comfort food, and the ever popular Greekish. There we go. In former lives, he had had his own vegan ice cream pop-up store called Nice Creamery, which we get into, and worked as a vegan private chef and caterer. Now he publishes his recipes so you can do all the work instead. I love that he says. Here to talk about his brand new cookbook, The Vegan Baker, the ultimate guide to plant-based breads, pastries, cookies, slices, and more, it's Zachary Bird. He's a vegan cookbook author, recipe developer, and social media personality, and he's not here for a long time, but he's here for a good time. Please welcome to the podcast the fiercely talented and ridiculously funny Zachary Bird. Welcome, my friend.
It is a real delight to be here.
I'm so happy you're here. We're going to start with your icebreaker question. Can you describe a favorite outfit you have in rotation recently, or even if it's a favorite t-shirt, anything like that, something like a piece of clothing where often you're like, "Ooh, I want to wear that, but I already wore it twice this week. I can't wear it again."
I am a bit of a Simpsons character when it comes to clothing, where I'm just like, that shirt for this year, and we'll review that next year. But no, I've just come back from Europe, where I've discovered all these cool, like, alternative leathers. So I'm wearing cool shirt made from cork from Portugal, a big export of Portugal. So I'm very, I'm loving wearing it, because people ask me about it, and then I get to talk about veganism and be like, oh, it's made from cork.
That's made from cork?
Yeah, like a wine bottle.
What's the name of the company? I'm curious now. Do you know?
Just general tourist shops of Portugal.
I thought it was like some specialty vegan shop or something. But that's amazing.
Portugal without someone offering you a cork hat.
got it. Okay. Yeah, I really like that. I was like, oh, I must have one, but now I see. I just need to go to Portugal, then I'll be able to find one. Yes, it's very good. Very good. Mine is, you know, I guess it didn't just end, but I guess like I had this tank top and this pair of like short shorts I was wearing all summer that I already missed. So I'm excited for the weather to turn to warm again so I can wear those again.
Your fashion moment.
That was the only moment, yes, because I'm like t-shirt, jeans, like what's happening? Let's keep it simple. But that particular tank top and shorts I was getting into this summer.
Yeah, yeah.
Every chance I got. Well, it's a pleasure to finally have you on the podcast, and I've been a big fan of your Instagram, and it always has me laughing. You're just always, you know, you're hitting points on there, but you're also keeping me laughing, which I enjoy. And then you've got your books. You're a talented recipe developer, having worked with some great brands. And your first book, Vegan Junk Food, A Down and Dirty Cookbook, was released in September 2020. I actually did an episode dedicated to that, everyone. So you can check it out. It's episode 77 if you all want to hear more about that book. And then your follow-up cookbook, The Vegan Butcher, was released November 2021, has been announced the winner of PETA's Best Vegan Cookbook of 2021. And then today we're here to talk about your brand new cookbook, The Vegan Baker, the ultimate guide to plant-based breads, pastries, cookies, slices, and more. But before we dive into that, can you tell us a bit about... that book up. The gorgeous book. The gorgeous book. And no, also, can I tell you how obsessed I am with these? Was that your idea?
It was not. I walked in and my publisher was like, we've got trans celebratory bookmarks in the book. I was like, amazing.
It is so, just to have the bookmarks built into a cookbook is, I'm like, this is incredible. Are you kidding me? So for everyone who can't see us, who's listening, there's these bookmarks built into the book so you can actually mark your favorite recipes to go back.
I love when I give the book as a gift. It's lovely. You write your little message, but then you can pinpoint like, hey, make sure you check out this recipe first.
Oh, that's very good. I never thought about that. Well, we're going to dive into that book soon. But before we do that, can you tell us a bit about your history? When did cooking become part of your life? And when did it turn into vegan cooking for you?
That question has one and the same answer for me. I went vegan, and that's kind of was my catalyst to being like, oh, food's not really as delicious as I remember anymore. So I'm going to have to learn some skills to bridge the gap now. So they all happened at once. And I had to learn how to cook, and then other people wanted to grab some of the recipes I was cooking. And it has very slowly over 10 years evolved into what you see today.
Yes. Yes. I mean, that's kind of, so when you were a kid, were you into cooking at all? Like casually, is that maybe a little, not at all?
In the way that it is my full personality trait these days.
Sure.
Nothing like that. You know, I enjoyed a bit of a making a cookie for a fundraiser kind of vibe. But no, I didn't have any passion for it. And I think a lot of that is just being like I was like a little vegetarian eating cheese pizza.
Sure.
There was nothing to invite creativity. You know, if I wanted food, I could get it from the supermarket. Every restaurant catered for me. So I'm not thanking the lack of option to veganism for pushing me where I am, but it has forced a lot of people like me to level up and get a skill.
Yeah, it's actually the same for me. I was not into cooking like this until I went vegan. And then it just became exciting. And also the recreation of things. I'm like, what can I recreate? Like, what is the thing I'm missing? And what is someone, or better yet, and maybe same for you. Like, if someone says, well, I can never have this again, you're like, oh, that's so untrue. Let me just give you these three recipes that I have. Yeah, exactly. Yep, so that totally makes sense. Yeah.
And I don't know if there is I'm sure someone with a psychology degree could unpack this further, but perhaps, you know, there was some like guilt I had before I went vegan that I didn't quite understand, where I just didn't have that celebratory feeling towards food, where it was just like food is the thing I eat at the end of the day and maybe at the start of the day. And once I went vegan, I was like, oh, this is really yummy and I don't feel bad.
Yeah. Yeah, that is kind of the amazing part, right? Did you say vegetarian? Were you vegetarian for a long time before you went vegan?
Yeah. I was one of those a long time vegetarian before I jumped further.
I love that you said the cheese pizza, because I'm thinking vegetarians, it was like French fries and cheese pizza, basically. We're like, you can always order the French fries. You can always get yourself a cheese pizza. There's always, you know.
I would have eaten more animal products as a vegetarian than as a meat eater, because, you know, especially 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Still today, I look at a vegetarian option on a menu and it's like gorgonzola with mozzarella. Yep. Stuff with some feta, and it's like, you guys know there are other ingredients.
That's so true, though. You're so right. Also, too, when I see a bunch of vegetarian options, I'm like, just make it vegan already. Like, just go the step further. Like, why are we wasting our time at this point?
Cheese today.
Like, yeah, it's bananas. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just take it out. Take it out. It's fine.
I have a game I play in Melbourne where, if you know, when you've got a menu and there's a little code of like V for vegetarian, VG for vegan. Mm-hmm. There are so many places that have VG for vegan and they don't have anything on the menu with that code on it. And they've got 7 vegetarian thing and they put the code there so they acknowledge they know the word vegan.
Yeah.
And then you read the whole menu to realize I can't eat today.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you're confused too. You're like, we were just on vacation and it was this whole menu had the same thing. And we asked the server, we're like, so what are the vegan options then, since you're listening?
Something, Matt.
And he literally was like, well, there's this rice there. And I was like, okay. I was like, so what else? If we felt we needed an icon to tell us there were vegan options, what are we putting that icon with besides on the bottom of the menu?
The only vegan icon you should look out for is me.
Yes! Yes, that's exactly right. Iconic, darling. When you went vegan, do you remember? So you went vegan, you started cooking, you got really into it. What was there a cookbook that resonated with you the most? Do you have like a favorite first vegan cookbook that you had?
That is a really, I've never had that question. And I love it. I remember, so my partner at the time and I went vegan on the same day at the same time, and he purchased me Miyoko Skinner's artisanal cheese cookbook. Do you know it?
I do. Oh, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
One of the original Bibles. And it's inspired so much of who I've become, where I was like, oh my God, you can find a topic and just dedicate yourself to veganizing it and sharing it with the world.
Yeah.
Little me's of the world froth for it. So that book definitely changed my life. It's also, it also holds the one recipe that's ever beaten me in my whole life. There's only one thing I can't do, and it's Miyoko Skinner's Rejuvelac.
So I hear you on that. We can't do it because you don't like the smell of it, or can't do it because, is that why? Or are you just like
testing? I ask it up every time. And the thing about, if you don't know what the recipe is, readers at home, is it's rotten water.
Basically.
You're fermenting, like, you're activating grains or whatever to make alive water.
Yeah.
It takes a week. And when you screw it up, you've just made a thing of rotten water that took you one full week to make.
Absolutely.
I hate it.
Agreed. I started using, instead of that, I use juice from like sauerkraut now to sort of like work around it a little bit. Because, and honestly, I think I read that in one of her books. Not that one, because that one is all about the rejuvenation. Like that one is like, everything you're making has it. And I remember in my tiny kitchen in New York when I was in, it was like sitting on top of my fridge and jars, and like the whole, my tiny kitchen just stank. It was nasty. So I hear you on that. I hear you.
And it's genius. That's not to discredit me. Okay. Right. Discredit me. also not starting your vegan cooking journey on Rejuvelac.
Sure.
Even today, 10 years later, I'd be like, I don't think I'm ready for Rejuvelac.
Other options now. So it's okay. Well, let's get into your book, The Vegan Baker, The Ultimate Guide to Plant-Based Breads, Pastries, Cookies, Slices, and More. You start off with an introduction and get into the specifics on equipment and ingredients, covering some bases for us. And then we get into the recipes, with the first chapter being on basics. You give the rundown on eggs, dairy, sugar, pastries, and dough in this chapter. You cover a range of items to set people up for success in these categories, with recipes for items like meringue, custard, lemon curd, mango curd, and mayonnaise. For dairy, you've got butter, cream, sour cream, ganache, and condensed milk. And in the sugar section, sugar section, you cover candied citrus zest and syrup, caramel, raspberry, or strawberry jam, and vegan honey. What's the secret to a fantastic vegan caramel?
Oh, that is a big question. Well, because caramel is made so many different ways.
Sure.
The secret to vegan caramel is no different to normal caramel, I would say. And that secret is not touching the syrup once the sugar has dissolved, I would say, is the main secret to a good caramel. And watching it, even at a cookbook shoot, I can tell you the secret. The photo of this caramel is not the first photo of the caramel made that day. I fell out of this caramel. because this is perfectly colored caramel.
Yes.
One nanosecond later, it is no longer perfectly caramel.
Yes.
So the secret is to watch it and to kind of, you got to make it a few times to know, I want it to stop here. I've got to take it off the heat 10 seconds before, or put it into an ice bath, or it's about finding that exact spot where it's rich and flavorful and dark, but not burnt.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think that's actually a good tip in general when it comes to baking. You know, you're saying you make it a couple times. If it's not a success, you're starting to learn sort of the nuances of it, to like come back and hone it in again. You know, you've written this great recipe for people, but just because it's a matter of like fine tuning it, it sounds like.
To your point, especially with baking, like you are never going to make the perfect, well, you might make a few cookies perfect off the bat.
Sure.
But like croissant, even with the perfect recipe, it's going to take you four goes.
Yeah.
Because we don't know where your altitude's at. Your oven might run different temperature. Is it winter where you are? Because I might have written the book where it's summer. So you're going to have to adjust rising times. And then maybe your milk has 1% more protein than the one I use. So these are all normal variables, but it's why you trust an author, but you also don't go, oh, exactly as this is written. You need to learn and adapt to your cooking.
Adapt to where you are.
Science.
Yeah, baking is a science. And hot tip, everybody, get a little thermometer for your oven. It'll help you out so you can like check out your settings and see where everything's at and calibrate, you know?
My number one tip is no temperatures. Like, I've got a little gun to learn my oil temperature, oven thermometer, freezer thermometer, the little candy one. The amount of skills that you open up in the kitchen the second you get a thermometer, for example, a $5 candy thermometer, when you can make all these caramels and jams with precision.
Yeah.
You can also deep fry as soon as you get a $5 thermometer.
Mm-hmm.
So you can open up, if you can be confident on what temperature you're cooking at,
where you have to be at,
you can do a lot more in your kitchen.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Well, we move into pastries. You cover short crust pastry, pie crust, phyllo pastry, laminating dough, puff pastry, and rough pastry. And that takes us into the dough section with specifics on kneading, yeast, and leavening, and even sourdough starter. And that brings us to savory bread. Zach, when you were writing this book, what is a savory bread that you absolutely knew had to be in this chapter?
Oh, this whole book exists because of my focaccia recipe. Literally, every book I write starts with one popular recipe, and then my publisher being like, do we want to monetize that? And the focaccia from savory breads is the reason the baker exists.
I love that. And you've got, there's potato in the focaccia bread, right?
Yes. I've tested everything in this book, but I've made that focaccia a minimum 100 times. So it is perfected. And the potato makes the dough. I'm a big proponent of potato in dough. It is a miracle. It makes things softer, but it also, because it increases the moisture of dough, it means whatever has potato in it lasts longer. So it won't go stale as quick.
Absolutely. And I'm a fan of potato in anything. So put it in bread. Bread and potato. Like, I mean, it's just like, I'm on board 100%.
In the donut chapter, there's a potato-based donut. And when I was researching, like the first donut shops in the US were made from potatoes.
Oh, wow.
So potato in doughs is very normal, and it's something that's been around for a long time. We just forgot.
Which donut has the potato in it?
It's actually called potato donut.
Oh, there we go. There we go. Straight up. I won't forget that. I'll see it right when I get to the page. I love that.
Try it. And if you got leftover mashed potato, donuts and focaccia. Where am I on camera? There you go.
And if someone's out there stressing about making potatoes, you could also just do a quick instant vegan mashed potato if you're in like a super pinch, if you need to like really do a hack and cut a corner. Other recipes in the savory breads, we got the sourdough loaf, sourdough olive demi baguettes, 10th circle loaf. We've got that delicious focaccia we talked about. I think I saw you doing a morning special with that focaccia. Everyone seemed
in televised.
Yes. It should be called the famous focaccia ultimately.
Yeah. No, because I have a problem with the amount of like, I challenge you to Google a lasagna recipe without someone calling it my famous lasagna recipe. And if I've never bloody heard of it, then you don't get to call it that.
I'm feeling very attacked right now, Zach, in my second book. No, I called it the almost famous buffalo chicken lasagna.
I do like that.
Almost famous for that reason, though. I was like, nobody knows of this lasagna except me. I think it should be famous. So I'm going to call it the almost famous buffalo chicken lasagna.
I'm also projecting because when I started writing recipes, I was like, oh, I don't think I can call these 7 recipes the best ever, because now that best ever contradicts the other best ever.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, no. There's no graduating system of what is the real best.
Start numbering them. This is the 5th best, blah, blah,
the
blah, blah, blah.
Best focaccia recipe on my blog right now.
exactly. Then people will know. They'll know which order to start from then, at least.
This is true.
So many good things in here. You got garlic naan, crumpets, pretzels, bagels, English muffin, toasting loaf. Just really, really great stuff.
So many of these are very naturally vegan as well. Mm-hmm. So this is probably the easiest. Wasn't the easiest chapter to make because it's sourdough, but it was the easiest to veganize just because this, you know, bread is traditionally vegan until we start getting into enriched dough. So this is not the most groundbreaking chapter, but it's one of the most delicious.
But it breaks the book open and everyone loves bread. And that takes us into the next chapter, which is sweet breads. And I'll be real. I buy bananas and forget about them. And so I'm quick to make some banana bread. And you know, I have my own recipe, and I think even my last book had a recipe, but I was looking at some bananas on my counter. I'd just gotten this book in the mail, and I was like, I bet maybe there's one in here, just maybe. Zach, this is the most delicious banana bread I've ever made in my entire life in this book. I was like, what the? It was like moist and fluffy at the same time. Perfect, like, balance of sweet in it too. It was, I'm never going back to my recipe for banana bread. I'm just going to be making yours.
And you try someone else's and you're like, oh, I've just invalidated a lot of my own work.
And I'm like, I'm sorry to everyone. You should just really make the one in.
I retract. Yes, but... like, you open the newspaper where they have the retraction, and it's like Zachary Bird says, "Do not put one banana in." He's tried Dustin's, and he reckons it should be two.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. My husband too was also a big fan of it. He was like, "Oh, how did this happen? What is?" And I was like, "I won't make mine anymore. Don't worry." What are a couple of your favorite sweetbreads in this chapter?
Great question. Look, I'm a big muffin boy. I really like the jumbo blueberry muffin because. Mm. When I was writing it, I was like, there's a lot of lovely muffin recipes on the internet, but there's a big disparity between the kind of muffin that you find in a recipe on the internet and a cafe muffin. You know,
like you've got a big cafe muffin?
Those big boy ones. Mm-hmm. Right? And I was like, that's what I want out of a muffin. So I really like that one because I think I write in there, it's like a full-fledged cafe muffin.
Do you use a larger tin for it then to make like a large muffin tin for it?
I think I just overfill it. I just fill it like insanely. And I just tweak the recipe so that it cooks fully in that volume.
Yep.
But it's perfect. I think it's like half frozen blueberries, half non-frozen. So like there's some textural differences. And my secret, are you ready? There's a book called The Flavor Thesaurus that I love. And in it I learned that blueberries and coriander seed share a lot of flavor compound.
Look at that.
Muffins, I put a pinch of coriander seed in it.
Very smart. I should open that book more often.
Or like a blueberry.
That's lovely. Oh, that book is sitting somewhere on one of my shelves collecting dust. Now I know why your banana bread is better.
You don't need it. I stole the one tip that excited me and I put it in my book.
Well, so the muffins and the blueberry muffins, what's another one of your favorites from this chapter?
I'll have to check.
So many good things.
This bad boy. The wholemeal raisin cinnamon loaf is like, I don't know what you call it, fruit bread, fruit toast, raisin toast? Do you not have a version?
I don't think so. Let me go to that page and look at it closer.
Oh, my God. Like, toastable bread with raisin studded throughout.
Oh, like raisin. Yeah, raisin bread. But you'd call it raisin toast after we toast it. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I love, like, I grew up eating raisin bread.
With some peanut butter? You ever put peanut butter on it?
Sorry?
Peanut butter on it? Toasted raisin bread with peanut butter?
How dare. You would never adulterate it. You would merely put fat. Butter, margarine, and nothing else.
Understood. That might be
my little, like, Aussie upbringing.
Maybe. Understood. I would never. I just said, have you ever? I didn't say I had ever.
I can see the flavor profile you're working with. I think it's too much, but I appreciate it.
Understood. Understood. Okay. All right.
I think you've gotten a bit big for your britches, mate.
Oh, all right. So don't take my advice on wholemeal cinnamon fruit loaf.
Take my raisin toast and don't listen to
me. But so many great things in here. We've got the coconut scones too. I had my eyes on those. And orange and poppy seed muffins. I'm into that too.
I love, like, low waste is really, I don't want to say popular. It is popular, but it's a cool thing that we should all
Absolutely, yeah.
And I love that recipe because we make the candied citrus peel ourselves. So it's just like, you know, zesting a citrus and then boiling it in sugar. My old roommate has been caught eating, I think, 9 oranges worth of peel for dessert one night, which is probably really bad for you, but it's so yummy. And it's something like you're juicing it for the recipe and you get this free sack of essential nature's candy.
Sure.
And so delicious in the orange and poppy seed muffins.
Oh, that's delicious, though. I can understand why one would eat so many in one set. I mean, it's just, it's delicious. Just,
like, you've imagine just like using your teeth to not eat the orange, but to like resist an entire orange, doing that 9 times and heading to bed and saying, that was good.
I mean, doesn't sound good. I love it. Well, our next one is pastry, and who doesn't love pastry, am I right? This next chapter is boasting with winning items like croissants, almond cruffins, apricot danishes, cannoli, baklava, and apple strudel. Now, you mentioned croissants earlier on already. Croissants for the home cook can be hard. What would you say, what advice would you give the croissant maker if they tackle this recipe in your book?
Croissants for the non-home cook can be really hard.
Exactly, they are, right. Yeah.
They're the perfect intersection of needing to have mastered yeast and knowing how to rise something, but also fat, because we're trying to simultaneously keep the butter cold so it's kept in layers, but we want to get the yeast warm enough to start like coring its way up. So it is it's the edging of pastry, I would call it. Can I say that?
You can absolutely say that, and that makes total sense when you put it that way.
You get yourself to the right zone and you keep yourself there until that croissant is done. What was the question? I'm just taking myself.
You know, tips for the home cook with croissants, essentially. So there you go.
Because of the coldness is key to keep the butter really cold, and the kind of fat we can use for vegan croissants is even more finicky.
Sure.
So in the book, I go through, when I make croissants, the whole house is in air conditioning. I put ice bags on my bench. I cook at 3 a.m. because it's a little bit colder.
Like, sure. All
tips, just to 2 degrees colder can buy you 5 more minutes to fold your dough. So these little factors become really relevant when you have a day croissant recipe.
Yeah.
So temperature. It's all about knowing your temperatures, like I said, and maintaining.
Yeah, when I saw croissants in here, I was like, damn, he did it. He got the croissants in here. That's great. He went and done did it, but that's great advice too. And if someone just picked up this book, what pastry would you tell them to make first from this chapter?
Ooh, okay, pastry to start on. In terms of like what you would begin, maybe cannoli, because everyone's impressed by cannoli, aren't they?
They are. It's true.
I don't think you either cannoli or baklava.
Okay. Yeah. That's great.
So good. And in my first book, one of my favorite recipes, one of my favorite recipes is baklava frozen yogurt. And I just smash baklava into coconut yogurt and then put it into an ice cream churner. So that recipe is really close to my heart.
I love that. People don't have enough fun with ice cream at home. People need to get into the ice cream game, because really it is about making that fun base and then crushing stuff you love and tossing it in.
Oh, my goodness. You can get ice cream makers really cheap because you freeze it.
Yeah, inexpensive.
And 2 years ago, I was testing Neapolitan ice cream, and I had a revelation. I think strawberry ice cream is my favorite ice cream, and I would never be caught dead saying that until I made it myself. I was like, these store-bought strawberries, get out of here. Getting, like, going to the farmer's market, getting cheap, beautiful strawberries,
Making
slightly to get the moisture out, and then making, like, the freshest strawberry ice cream is a revelation.
Oh my God, is everyone listening to this? Your passion for food is it's infectious. I just how much you know about it. It's very inspiring.
I once had a pop-up ice cream business. So you've literally I used to sleep next to an industrial ice cream freezer in my studio apartment. So you have got me on a particular topic that's close to my...
Okay. I got you there. I read something. What was the name of it?
Nice Creamery.
There we go. I was like,
I always tell people that it was it sold out and it was a massive success. And that is all true if I don't bring up that I shut down on my second day of business. But on my first day, we sold out.
Well, then you had no choice, really.
Yeah. I was like, it was a limited edition run.
Yep.
Sell out, runaway success.
That's exactly right.
It was the era's tour of its time.
Yes.
to keep it relevant.
Huge success.
Yeah.
Good for you. Congratulations on your success, by the way. I've been meaning to mention. Well,
actually, the next accounts you can follow on the internet are formerly Nice Creamery accounts that I switched to my name after the business went out of business.
Is that so? Your Instagram account used to be the Nice Creamery account?
Nice Creamery. Zachary Bird Facebook was Nice Creamery.
That makes sense. All right. Yeah. Take it all with. Of course.
Yeah. It's all an ends to a means.
Plus, then there's still ice cream that pops up on there. So you're still giving the people what they want.
Share the recipes directly with you.
Exactly. That's not, and you actually said, I don't know if it was in this book or where it was, but you said something great where you were like, now I'm just giving the recipes to you all so you can make the food on your own and I don't have to make it for you. And I'm like, that's genius. That's exactly right.
Do you know how many people are like, oh, are you a chef? Do you work in a kitchen? I was like, F no, brother.
No.
Absolutely not. Same. I do the recipe I do it a few times.
Yeah.
But once it's perfect,
it's yours.
You can make it for you.
Yep. I feel the same. Restaurant culture for me is not anything I ever wanted to be part of. It's so intense.
For myself. I mean,
yeah.
It's a hard job, the noble job. But I don't desire it.
That's exactly right. And we'll put that at that. Well, let's move into your next chapter, which is dedicated to pies. Have you always been a pie fan?
What's wrong with wrapping something in pastry?
Nothing. Like, everything's right with it.
There's a whole reason that there's a whole chapter in there, because every culture comes back to like, oh yeah, whack that in some pastry.
Yes, absolutely. Well, what is this? Tell me about the fat bastard pie.
Okay, every cookbook, a recipe gets over the line, and I don't know how the editor doesn't pull it out or stop me. And this is this cookbook's recipe. I just did a collab with an amazing vegan pizzeria in Melbourne, and we did a pizza inspired by this recipe. And they were like, we're going to have to call it something else. And I was like, I know. I can't believe I got to call it this.
You're like, I was curious when somebody was going to say something to me. That's so funny.
Yeah.
I've done the same. You push the line with the publisher. Like, I'm just going to slip it in here and I'm going to see if anyone says anything. And then before you know it, it's published. And you're like, there it is.
The last cookbook, there was an 11 email chain between me and my editor over the word yeet, Y-E-E-T. And I was going to die on that hill. I was like, no, this joke is only funny if it ends with the word yeet. And that did not make it into the book.
Oh my gosh.
That bastard did. So there you go.
Well, what's in the fat bastard pie? Yeah.
It's hard to explain. It's basically a tribute to Fat Bastard from Austin Powers, but it is, I've always done like a pulled pork mac and cheese pie. Okay. And I've kind of remixed it with macaroni pie is really popular in Scotland and hot water crust is really popular in Scotland. So it is sort of like the Scottish macaroni pie with like Southern American inspo with the pulled pork and hot sauce and pickles in there as well. There's also honey dill in the mac and cheese. So it's like a soul food pie.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. It's got.
My other cookbooks, I've had a lot of freedom to invent.
Yeah.
And kind of produce food that doesn't look like anyone else's. The baker is very much producing traditional, recognizable dishes. So I did kind of fight for a few things like this fat bastard pie.
Sure.
To be like, I'm a vegan recipe writer. At the end of the day, we should be making shit up.
Yeah. And it's your art. So you got to be able to express it somewhere.
Yeah.
That's the creative part of it, right? I hear that for sure. And I'm certainly glad that you did. And I'm very much into this... speaking of, like, this is more on the plain side here, but the rhubarb and strawberry ham pies in here. Rhubarb just has a special place for me. Is rhubarb big in Australia?
Look, would anyone call rhubarb big? Like, are there mosh pits happening for rhubarb?
I hate you so much.
Rhubarb craze has hit the nation. People are breaking into back gardens, ripping it out.
Rude. Okay, so you're not wrong there, right? Now I just like, I bring rhubarb up to so many people and they're like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, how do you not love rhubarb?
Does it have the same, it's like Nana's favorite. Like it's something like my Nana would make rhubarb related things.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think that has hit the next generation.
Sure. For me, yes, it was my mom, like in Michigan where I grew up, in our backyard there were like a couple things of rhubarb that grew every year. And now in New York and then in Atlanta where I'm at now, people are like, rhubarb? And I was like, it's delicious. Like, we just need to find some. I can't find it anywhere where I want to get it though.
It's a polarizing fruit, vegetable. What the hell is a rhubarb?
Good question.
My Nana used to subscribe to the 70s school of hiding everything in jelly. You know that, like, yes. Like she frothed for it.
Yeah.
And she used to hide, like, she'd serve savory jelly with pieces of rhubarb in it, but she wouldn't tell us what the pieces were until we'd eaten it. So my relationship with rhubarb has gone from like trauma mystery meat to now that my Nana has passed, I'm like, it's my connection to her. Like, she's rhubarb lady.
Yeah.
So this is actually a tribute to my Nana's love of rhubarb.
I want those right now.
It's amazing. These little hand pies with strawberries in there too. So simple to make. And they are an exciting little gift to your taste buds.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm going to make them. I'm definitely going to make them whenever I can find rhubarb again. Rhubarb,
strawberry jam. Actually, look at my own recipe. What bit of corn flour. But it's a very simple filling.
Yeah.
And the rhubarb and strawberries, enough.
Yes. And you've got fruit pies in this chapter. You've got meat pies and also mini lemon pies, a black forest pie, a pecan cookie pie, to name a few. Listeners, if you like
every Greek pie, but that's fine. It's a range.
What kind of pie? Tell us again.
There's like 11 Greek pies in this book, and you wouldn't even mention one. I did.
Maybe because I didn't know how to pronounce it, and I was nervous.
Yeah, so that'll do it.
Tell us about a couple, then.
I think the Greeks have mastered the art of the pie. We've got spanakopita.
I also wasn't done yet, Zach, but that's fine.
You didn't mention galaktoboriko from the last chapter. I'm just feeling disappointed.
I need you to call this out then and mention them so we let people know of all of the amazing variety that's in here.
The spanakopita, everyone knows spinach pie.
Yeah.
There's also kolokithopita, which is a zucchini pie. I just love vegetable pies from Greece, you know, tangy, cheesy, lemony, with the celebration of a vegetable.
And you're putting a lot of Rejuvelac into those cheesy ones, right?
Maybe they are, and then I'm purchasing it.
Yes,
and I'm putting it in.
Can you buy it? Can you buy the Rejuvelac?
Oh, God, no.
Oh.
You think I would spend a week making rotten water if you could buy it from $8 at the shop? No, I don't think it's blown up in that way yet.
Yeah, well, maybe one day, or maybe people will just hop onto the sauerkraut journey. Who knows? Well, you did the damn thing here, and you give us a chapter dedicated to donuts. Donuts, everybody. We already talked about the potato donut, but what's a recipe in this chapter that someone should take to a gathering to share with friends if they want to blow everyone's mind with a donut?
This feels like a loaded question.
Because really, all of them, it's a donut.
No. Look, actually, that would have been a much better answer, but I actually have a... whenever I go to a potluck, I always take the Portuguese pumpkin dreams. Like, for years, there's a reason that they're here, because every time I go sit in a park, the big bowl of their pumpkin donuts spiced with bits of walnut, loads of brandy, cinnamon sugar, and they are just... You know that flavor, like someone's grandmother has made this for you. It's got that homeliness to it, you know, it's a welcome thing to eat.
Oh, delicious. It sounds good. Plus pumpkin. Put that with anything. I'm sold on pumpkin.
And you get it. I told you I love a root vegetable.
Yeah. Yes. Well, what about a favorite donut for you? Is that, would you say the pumpkin, the Portuguese pumpkin donut's a favorite one for you?
That's for me to share with other people. My favorite donut.
Yes.
Well, either Lucumares, because they're the Greek donut.
I was going to ask you. I have it written down on my notes to ask you about the Lucumares, so I just want to tell you that, but continue, please.
Thank you. Lucumares taste like my childhood, you know what I mean? So they're like,
well, tell me about it, though. I was going to ask you what it was. What is that exactly?
So Lucumares are just Greek donut. They're really simple ones where you just get a sticky dough and you slide off a spoon into your batter.
Okay, so like almost like a donut hole, like a round. Is
yeah, there... like a donut hole.
Right, okay.
Much more fast and loose and a little bit different.
Yep.
And you cover it with a vegan honey and pistachio. But like I remember going to the airport, like stopping at the international airport in Australia in Brisbane at like the age of 8, and all the old Greek aunties come through customs with like alfoil filled with the Lucumares and a little jar of honey for us to like sit in an international lounge and eat donut. So they mean a lot to me.
What is a sweet potato beaver tail?
A sweet potato beaver tail. I run a vegan foodie tour of Bali, and one of the people on it last year was Canadian. So whenever I am writing a book and I'm a group of international people, I'm like, what's in your land?
Yeah.
And speak about the beaver tail, and I'm obsessed. It's just like a flatbread sort of looking donut, and you score in a beaver tail looking cross, which creates lots of crevices for sugar and lemon juice to creep into.
Delicious things.
And as we know, I adore root vegetables in donut dough. So I thought sweet potato, the person who taught me about this, is a big health freak. Is that a loving thing to say? I don't think so. They love health.
They love health. There you go. Yeah.
This is my tribute to their Canadian love of beaver tails and vegetables.
Yeah, very good. Very good. I love that. And our next chapter we get into is cookies for all the cookie monsters out there. It has what you want with recipes for shortbread cookies, biscotti, macarons, and your traditional chocolate chip cookie. But there are some I've never heard of in here. I would love to learn more from you, Zachary, about the wagon wheel cookie, the marshmallow filling, and the jam. Tell me more.
Is that not something that you have?
Maybe we do, and I just don't know about it.
No, this is the fascinating thing about writing cookbooks is you learn so much about what you take for granted. Well, there's measurements, but just ingredients or what is a cultural... Sorry?
No, go ahead. Sorry, I was cutting you off.
So yeah, what is culturally specific to me and what is a universal experience? Because you learn so much. You're like, what do you mean? Like, I'd never put jam inside a croissant. I was like, what the hell?
Sure.
Like, I've never seen a croissant as sweet until I'd gone to Paris.
Sure.
And I was like, oh, we put ham and cheese in them.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So it's just interesting when you realize what is true and what is just like what your mom did.
Well, but as I'm looking at this, I feel like I've seen, if I close my eyes, I'm seeing a package of like a Little Debbie snack or something that kind of looks like these. So it's possible that it's just one that missed me in my youth, potentially, you know?
The wagon wheel rolled right past you.
The wagon wheel rolled right past me. But it's got delicious. It's got the marshmallow and the jam and then chocolate in here as well. What else in this cookie?
I think you kind of lifted it all. Well, but is that sort of marshmallowy moment in the middle. In Australia, at least, I think the jam's quite a sticky one. So it's not a bad appropriation for the home cook. But these are a lovely event of a cookie to make.
And what about the alfajores? Did I say that correctly?
Alfajores.
Alfajores.
This recipe, probably the one I've worked on the longest from the whole book, just because I had to make vegan alfajores for a wedding like 6 years ago, which in hindsight were garbage. I hope you guys are happy still because I made really bad alfajores for your wedding. these are a delight. Everyone who tries my alfajores loses it. Everyone from South America, affirms that they are within the space that they need to be. And so it's South American caramel, which is dulce de leche. You get condensed milk, you cook it down further until it's really thick and caramelly. And then it's like a lemony, light alcohol little biscuit. Not a lot of alcohol, but a little bit. It's so good. Big I recommend. I love it.
Sounds delicious. Delicious.
And here's the thing, testing, condensed milk and vegan dulce de leche. If you go through the internet, people make out like it's the hardest thing you'll ever make in your life. It's like impossible. No one knows how to do it. Lies.
Lies. It's not true.
So easy. It is the easiest recipe in the book, I would say. And it makes world-class dulce de leche. It is just your choice of milk, great, sugar, and I think it's baking soda.
Perfect.
And 1 hour of not letting things burn on your stove.
Yes, yes. And now perfected by you. So home cooks can actually make it now for themselves.
Oh my God, it's so good. And it's the problem normally with alforjes is you can buy vegan dulce de leche, but it's the wrong texture.
Okay.
It's too soft and you can't spread it between cookies.
Okay.
This is the perfect one where it sandwiches.
Sticks together. Well, it looks so good too. These photos are so amazing in here. And the next chapter is cakes and puddings. I love cake. Love it, love it, love it. I want to marry it. Victoria. Would you say not vegan?
Sorry?
What did you say about it? Cake?
I hate cake.
Lies.
I just hate it.
Do you really?
I actually was forced to put this chapter in. I did not do any cake for this whole book.
Is that why, too, it's cakes and puddings? You were like, I'll do it, like, but we're also going to,
I was like, okay, well, I'll bulk it out a bit. I just hate cake, which is why I'm the person to learn cake from, because I've got a high standard.
That is very funny.
Like, every birthday as a kid, I'd get ice cream cake. I think it's a waste of calories. You can do better things with those calories.
Oh, are you kidding me? I love cake. I love cake. It's my favorite use of calories.
What is your favorite cake?
I'm plain. I like everything plain, just like vanilla cake and vanilla frosting. I know.
Oh, so judgy.
I know. It's okay. No, show me that judgy face. I'm here for it.
Wow, that's really cool and a diverse point of view that you share.
I love cake. Just plain old cake. Or I like yellow cake with chocolate frosting. I know. Basic as can be.
What's yellow cake?
It's like a boxed thing. Okay. I've had to like veganize it because I can't get it in a box, you know? Like with turmeric, basically. It's like vanilla cake that's yellow for some reason.
Yeah, okay. Like buttery. Yeah.
Sure. I mean, buttery is a very kind. Yeah, I don't think that's why. But sure. Yeah. Well, then, so I won't ask you what your favorite cake is in this chapter. I'll just say that the Victoria sponge cake looks amazing.
Secret is get some fresh fruit in there too.
Yes. Look,
honestly, I think there's so many great books about vegan cake decorating and making.
Sure.
Why I was like, I don't think I need to do too much on this because this is the whole book. You know what I mean? We don't want, if I pick 12 random cakes, you'd be like, what about the Swedish princess, huh? Where's my hummingbird?
Sure.
So, actually, I've got a good friend, Sarah Kidd, who does the Vegan Cake Bible, and that book is available. So I was kind of like,
That's good. And now you were like, I love that you said, I'll do cakes, but also puddings. So what is your favorite pudding in the chapter?
Now I'm back on board. Pudding baby. My grand's rice pudding, which is like every time I would visit as a kid, I'd be like, are you making rice pudding with fruit salad? And so this is, she stood in the kitchen with me and I had all my vegan substitute and she monitored everything and approved every substitution and now prefers the vegan version.
Oh, so amazing.
Is very important to me.
That is a great ending to that.
And I love rice. Like I grew up loving it and I realized a lot of people are like, oh, I hate rice pudding. It's a texture thing. And I'm like, I just thought the whole world froth for rice pudding. So
it's the way it was made for you.
Yeah. They need to make grand rice pudding.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
If you just melt ice cream into it at the very end.
That and that just sounds delicious right there. And I have my eye on, and I made already, the peach cobbler for one. I'll show you.
Oh, you did?
Well, so I made one last night, and it was so good. that I made another one today.
You can't make peach cobbler for two. The recipe is peach cobbler for one.
I know. Well, I made one last night and one today. That's what I'm saying. Between.
Well, I'm glad you did that because I wrote, this is the first cookbook I wrote single, living by myself.
Okay.
And it was the first time I was like, oh my God, why do I do everything as four portion sizes? Especially when you're writing a baking book.
It's called meal prep.
By the deadline because you're like, I don't need 8 hot cross buns by 10 a.m.
Yeah.
I didn't want to have those, like, you know, when you're like, it's late at night, I want dessert, but I don't want too much.
Yeah.
Like, recipes in there, this and the 10-minute chickpea brownies, where it's like, fuck it.
Yeah.
Like 15 minutes of making something exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you put those in there. And for me, I've been obsessed lately with, I know you're going to hate this, but mug cakes. So, like, if I just want. So when I saw that for the peach cobbler for one, you don't like cake. It's okay. But now we've got
Mug cake is a brownie masquerading.
True.
In this chapter, I have a microwave brownie. So I'm very much within this space.
Yes. I love that.
My hatred of cake can be offset by cheating. Like if it's like a microwave mug, then I can get back on board.
There you go. You're all set then. Well, just the convenience of it, right? If you're not going through the process.
A hot mug cake that didn't exist 3 minutes before you're eating it with like something cold melting on the top.
90 seconds, really, even. Let's really tell the people where it's at. You can get one. Oh, I guess if you put the time in to make it, 3 minutes is good. That's good. 3 minutes, you're getting yourself a mug cake. It's delicious. Everyone should try it. Speaking of everyone, the final chapter in this book is called To Share. We got the roasted mushroom pide in here. A Turkish pizza flatbread looks absolutely marvelous, but that's not all. There's a few that I'm drawn to instantly, like the artichoke pesto phyllo tart, margarita pizzas, jalapeno cornbread, and pesto stuffed sourdough pull apart. The pampushki looks beautiful. I'd never heard of this until this book. Can you tell me what that is?
Your pampushki looks beautiful.
You look good.
It's like a cue card off camera seeking
beautiful. Well, I paused because I was like, pampushki, right? Did I say it right?
Pampushki, yeah.
There we go. That was the pause, really. I was like,
this is third hand knowledge, though.
Well, so tell me more about it, though. What is it?
Pampushki is Ukrainian garlic rolls. So you serve it with borscht. It is one of the most delicious things in this book, and it is because it is aggressively garlicky. You make them into little buns, but I do something exciting in the book, and I spiral them up. So there's somewhere between, like, garlic rolls and garlic pull apart. Like, oh, what do you call them? Garlic knots?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somewhere in the middle of that space. This is definitely one of my favorite. Like, this is the one that I make for everyone, and they go, make that again.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, when you think about that, ones you've made and people say make it again, and this chapter is called To Share, what's another one of your favorite recipes to share with people from this chapter?
Langosh. Langosh is so good. So probably
tell
another one.
Tell us more.
Langosh is a Hungarian garlic bread. Essentially. So I'm in Brisbane, Australia at the moment. Great. And for some reason, Hungarian food trucks are huge in this city. Like they're everywhere. Everywhere you go, I can find langosh. And I'd never heard of it before I moved here. So it's you could kind of call it Hungarian pizza. It's like deep fried flatbread topped with garlic, topped with, you know, they change all the toppings depending on what you want.
All the
this combination
stuff.
Of chives, I think it's sour cream, unmelted cheese, just like I see at the market, and so much garlic. It's actually something I think about a lot.
I love it. Now I'm going to be thinking about it. I want to try that too. So good.
Yeah, I think you should. And it's one of those simple flatbread. You know, you roll it out and put crap on top.
And sounds so good to share. Just perfect for the chapter, like you said. And that wraps up the book, my friend. Before we get into your rapid fire round of questions, can you tell me your book brag, something you're most proud of when it comes to the Vegan Baker book?
Well, this one's a little baby. She doesn't have the accolades yet. I don't know. Ask me about my books with accolades.
Well, what are you most proud of when it comes to writing the book then?
No, I can pick. We have to build her up. You know, she's just a young one. I think with this book, this is the one that I could share the most of my family's background.
Oh, nice.
You know, yeah. Like the vegan butcher. There's not, you know, there's not like my mother would make sausages from scratch. She would not. Yeah. But there's a lot of family recipes in here. So it is lovely to share my background and update it.
Yeah.
With veganism.
Yep.
So it's something that I'm particularly proud of.
That's great.
And my most proud moment, book-wise, probably Jacinda Ardern taking my first cookbook on TV.
Yeah.
Sorry. Absolutely. I can share a lot of things with, like, people who have had similar experiences. Not a lot of global leaders take a lot of vegan cookbooks on television, you know?
Yeah. That's so take cool. that in. Yeah, that's great. It's a win. Win-win. Are you ready for your rapid-fire round of questions?
Clear the space.
Ready to roll. All right. First pop song that pops into your head right now when I ask you to think of a pop song.
The Veronica's Forever.
What is the perfect coffee order for you? Or if you don't order coffee, what's a drink at a coffee house you would order?
The greatest coffee in the world is from Singapore, a place called September, and it is the black sesame iced latte.
Oh, okay. Favorite kind of muffin?
My jumbo blueberry muffins from this book.
Very good.
Or a buttered muffin if it's October 4th.
What kind of muffin?
It's a Mean Girls reference. Give me your gay card right now.
Oh, my goodness. What's your most used emoji?
Monkey covers eyes. Oh, no, monkey covers ears. Monkey covers ears, because I'm deaf. So I like that one.
Food on a skewer or a tiny spoon?
One more time.
Food on a skewer or a tiny spoon?
Food on a skewer or yep. Chinese food?
Tiny spoon.
Oh, skewer. Always skewer.
Yes. And what is something you love about Instagram?
That it connects me to many like-minded souls that I've not had the luxury of meeting in real life.
There we go. And do you have a favorite tradition or holiday?
Traditional holiday? Gay Christmas, Halloween.
Ah, very good. Me too. Halloween's the best. What did you bake last?
What did I bake?
Yeah, the last thing you baked.
It's called Pão de Deus, God's bread. It's Portuguese sweet rolls with like condensed milk, coconut topping. And we're doing it again today, but we're very close to perfecting the recipe for you.
Delicious, delicious. What is your favorite way to season popcorn?
Season popcorn?
Mm-hmm.
Not with sugar. Too much sugar in popcorn. Salt. Salty salt. Movie theater, buttery popcorn.
Yes. Last vegan restaurant you went to?
Entirely vegan restaurant would be Red Sparrow Pizza in Melbourne, where you can try the dead sexy pizza special made by me.
There we go. I love that. And most popular recipe you can recall that you posted on Instagram?
It would be my first viral one, which was CFC drumsticks, okay. Which is like jackfruit chicken on a cauliflower bone, deep fried like KFC.
Nice. All right. That's your rapid fire.
That's my rapid fire.
Yeah. Bam, 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 bam. Well done. Well done. Zachary, please let everyone know where they can find you on social media and the internet, please.
You may find me on any form of social media that currently exists that is not a subscription service. Zachary Bird with 2 C's, Z-A-C-C-H-A-R-Y, Bird like the animal. My website's got recipes. My Instagram has dances. My TikTok has a lot of hate comments, actually. My Facebook has sassiness. My Pinterest has pinned whatever you want. What are we calling it? X or Twitter? That just has the other things I posted, reposted?
Yeah.
There's something for everyone.
Yeah, I love it. Something for everyone. And I'll send you nothing but comments of love on that Instagram, I promise. Everyone, be sure to grab your copy of The Vegan Baker. Everywhere books are sold. This is the ultimate guide to plant-based breads, pastries, cookies, slices, and more. And if you're building your Zachary Bird collection, and I hope you are, don't forget to buy Vegan Junk Food and The Vegan Butcher as well. Zachary, you are a gem. And I'm so happy you were able to join me to talk about The Vegan Baker today. Thank you for making the time.
Merci du fond de ma cœur. I've had a great time. Thanks for having me.
Please do us a favor and rate, review, and or subscribe to this podcast anywhere you're listening to it. The reviews really do help, and we really appreciate it. Also, remember, you can follow the podcast on Instagram at Keep On Cooking Pod. You can also follow me at The Dustin Harder, and you can check out my website for my books and the Vegan Roadie web series and anything else you're interested in at DustinHarder.com. This has been a Muzzy Cat production.